Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to this special edition of MTC Studio, broadcasting live from Irvine, California. Today, I'm very excited to talk about my favorite topic, SharePoint. As you might have heard, SharePoint 2016 was released to manufacturing on March 14th. And today, I have a very special guest, a returning guest from Redmond, to talk about SharePoint 2016 and what's next for SharePoint. With that, I would like to introduce our guest speaker, Bill. Hi, Bill.
Thanks, Ali. Glad to be here today. I'm Bill Baer, a senior product manager in our SharePoint product group here in Redmond, Washington. And today I'd like to provide an overview of SharePoint Server 2016. For those that are new to the product or haven't seen some of its capabilities, or would just like to understand a little bit more as to why SharePoint Server 2016 is an important release that you may consider as part of your overall platform investments as you move forward.
Perfect. So, Bill, before we start, maybe we can ask all the attendees, if you guys have any question throughout the presentation, feel free to put those questions in the Q&A box on the right corner of your screen, and we will answer all the questions on air and offline. And with that, Bill, take it away.
Thanks, Ali. So as we thought about SharePoint Server 2016, we paid attention to industry trends as we designed the product. And we really looked back at SharePoint and had a moment of inflection and thought about what SharePoint 2016, what we wanted it to represent. So as we designed the product leading up to our March 14th RTM, we built it according to three core pillars, which were infrastructure, compliance, and experiences. Now on the infrastructure side, there's a lot of benefit to SharePoint Server 2016 through which how we designed the product. So SharePoint 2016 is not only our on-premises server release, it's an on-premises server release that we've derived from our Office 365 innovations in SharePoint Online. On the infrastructure side, the way that all pulls together is SharePoint Server 2016 is the most comprehensively tested version of SharePoint because it was drawn from our cloud offering. In addition to that, you also gain all of the experience that we have running SharePoint at scale in Office 365 through SharePoint Server 2016. Many of those investments will allow you to handle more data more efficiently at lower cost. It'll enable more flexible deployments, whether you're on-premises, in the cloud, or somewhere in between. And it also allows you to maximize your existing infrastructure because we've built SharePoint 2016 to scale and grow with your organization. On the experiences side, our key investments were really taking what we know about how users operate inside of Office 365, particularly with SharePoint Server or SharePoint Online, and then bringing those investments back to the server release. So we've innovated in respect to improving mobile access to content through enabling new touch web-based UX experiences. We've invested in document storage and collaboration experiences that make those processes more people-centric. A great example of which is a new simple control command menu that sits just above document libraries now that provide quick access to the most commonly used tasks, such as sharing documents, uploading documents, or moving documents throughout your SharePoint infrastructure. In addition to that, we've also integrated select Office 365 experiences into SharePoint Server 2016 through our investments in hybrid experiences. On the compliance side, that was the third pillar of focus as we developed SharePoint Server 2016. And from a compliance perspective, we've added a lot of new capabilities to help drive data loss prevention and e-discovery, in addition to retention and policy management. Those all provide greater access control, it helps you keep information secure, and those investments were people-centric as well, through which compliance becomes part of the user experience as they create content and store content in SharePoint Server 2016. So if you think about it, in summary, we really focused on delivering a cloud-inspired infrastructure based on our experience running SharePoint at scale in Office 365, taking what used to be pages of documentation from TechNet that describe those best practices and actually building those into the code itself. And we've got examples through which we've implemented those, such as our MinRoll example, a role-based installation option with SharePoint Server 2016, all the way down to capabilities such as zero downtime patching. We've also made it more reliable. again, because SharePoint Server 2016 is the most comprehensively tested version of SharePoint because we've been running the product in the cloud. It's also cloud accelerated, so it enables you to take advantage of key innovation that we've delivered inside of Office 365. It's more intuitive to the extent that through Office 365, we can better understand how users use features and what features resonate well and work well in a user's scenario. And we've been able to take that experience and bring that back to the server product as well. And it's more secure by design, not only through those cloud-inspired infrastructure investments, but also by nature of the compliance investments that we've made in the product. On the cloud-inspired side, we focused on performance and scale, improving our boundaries and limits, and then providing you deployment flexibility with our product. On performance and scale, we focused on your ability to manage risk, complexity, and cost with SharePoint Server 2016 as compared to SharePoint Server 2013. A couple of examples are which, on the search side, we've actually increased our search capabilities or our scale capabilities with search by twofold, which provides you greater horizontal scale with your SharePoint deployments. With SharePoint Server 2013, you had a 250 million item per search server application limit in respect to the amount of content that you could index. That has been increased to 500 million items per search service application. So you have much greater scale in respect to search. On site collections and sites, we've increased the boundaries and limits fivefold for that particular scenario as well. So you have greater horizontal and vertical scale with site collections and sites. And content databases can now be measured in the terabytes as opposed to being measured in the gigabytes. And that reduces the sprawl, and it makes it a lot easier for your database administrators to manage, in addition for you to manage, as you have greater control over a fewer number of databases that represent those site collections and sites, which also represent the amount of content that you would subsequently index. And then we've increased our list view thresholds. So we have higher thresholds, and we have programmatic management tools built into the product to help accommodate large lists within the product. And we've implemented a new capability that we call large list auto-indexing. So we can programmatically determine when a list is reaching a threshold, and then we can programmatically add indexes to specific columns on that list. So we can take a more deterministic approach to helping users before they even reach those large list thresholds. Again, on deployment flexibility, we've taken a lot of the experience that we have running SharePoint at scale in Office 365, and we've accrued those back to our server release. We have our min-role deployment option, effectively which takes SharePoint to a role-based installation scenario. In the past, SharePoint servers were role agnostic. They became what you wanted them to become by virtue of placement in the topology or by virtue of the services you opted to deploy on those specific servers. With min-role, we've actually streamlined those administrative tasks because we've delivered a set of predefined server roles out of the box for you to take advantage of. Each server role is optimized for its particular use case. So for an example, a web front-end role is responsible for addressing user requests. And in that particular role, we've optimized all of the code paths for high throughput and high performance. We've also implemented zero downtime patching. So for those customers who have a highly available environment, you can leverage our new zero downtime patching logic, which delivers both smaller patches with a substantially smaller footprint, but it also takes all of our upgraders and turns them into online operations. So you can effectively patch with zero downtime, minimizing downtime and ultimately user disruption. On the reliability side, we've taken a number of key investments and brought those back to SharePoint Server 2016 as well, by virtue of those being native or by virtue of those being interoperability scenarios with other products that SharePoint takes a dependency on. On the project server side, we've natively integrated Project Server now into SharePoint Server 2016. So we're bringing the aspects of project and portfolio management closer to the content that a project manager would create by natively integrating Project Server into the product as opposed to being a separate installation. On the Windows Server 2016 side, there's a number of new features included in Windows Server 2016 that enable it for the cloud, be it virtualization, management, storage, or networking. But in addition to that, SharePoint Server 2016 is able to take advantage of capabilities that exist in Windows Server 2016, such as the REFS file system. On the SQL Server 2016 side, SQL Server 2016 provides a new set of comprehensive security options that we can support as well with SharePoint Server 2016. So you're able to modernize your infrastructure based on the complete Microsoft stack for 2016 as related to SharePoint. On the Cloud Accelerated side, we've instrumented a number of new capabilities for cloud acceleration. If you're in the process of considering Office 365 or SharePoint Online, and you'd like to take advantage of that innovation yet maximize return on investment on your existing infrastructure, or perhaps you can't move to the cloud as a wholesale proposition due to data sensitivity or data sovereignty concerns, or perhaps you have a significant investment in customization, or it could be corporate or regulatory compliance that precludes you viewing the cloud as a wholesale proposition, yet you want to deliver modern innovation back to your users. With SharePoint Server 2016, you can do exactly that. We've enabled SharePoint Server 2016 to interoperate great with Office 365 in hybrid scenarios, bringing capabilities such as OneDrive for Business for anywhere, anytime sync, that data mobility aspect that users would like. Office Graph and the Office Delve, the ability to deliver contextually relevant results back to your users without them having to form complex queries to recover information through search that exists in the SharePoint environment. The ability to enable team site aggregation across cloud and on-premises, as well as some exciting new IT hybrid options such as operational insights. For OneDrive for Business, inside of SharePoint Server 2016, you can selectively deploy OneDrive for Business to a subset of your organization or all of your organization, taking advantage of the latest innovation across OneDrive for Business and Office 365, and natively integrating that experience via the app launcher that exists in SharePoint Server 2016. So it gives you a best of both worlds approach. You can keep the existing information you have in your existing SharePoint environment, or you can migrate it to OneDrive for Business and Office 365, and you can access information from SharePoint sites anywhere, anytime, whether they exist on-premises or whether they exist in Office 365. We've also enabled you to take advantage of the Office Graph and Office Delve, which enables personalized information discovery. You can deliver contextually relevant results back to your users, so you can see what you need to know both today and tomorrow. For team sites, we're delivering a number of connected experiences that enable you to take advantage of a team site's experience both on-premises as well as in Office 365. So if you have an extranet scenario, you can easily share documents with external users through B2B external sharing by extending your team site experience to Office 365, but still having visibility into all of your sites regardless of where they exist. Perhaps you have sites that have a high degree of compliance associated with them. You'd like to keep them on premises. You can have that option and pair that with these extranet options as well. And you can also deliver social conversations via Yammer Embed directly within a team site that exists either on premises or in Office 365. On the operational insights portion, we're going to deliver a new IT admin experience that enables you to audit user activities by submitting anonymous usage data to Office 365 and then leveraging the power of the Office 365 Protection Center to rationalize that information and better understand the activity that transpires against your content as well as your environment. And a new set of APIs based on the Office 365 Activity Management API that enables you to extend those reports and build custom reporting and leverage those custom reports against your on-premises investments as well. So let's go ahead and have a quick look at some of the cloud-inspired infrastructure aspects of SharePoint Server 2016. We'll start by taking a look at some of these hybrid experiences that we just walked through in the previous portion of this conversation. So here we have a SharePoint Server 2016 site. As you can see, fundamentally, it shares a lot of similarities with SharePoint Server 2013. The new simple controls that I mentioned earlier in the conversation, you can see directly above the document library. So as you can see, we're providing quick access to scenarios such as the ability to create a new document or folder, upload a document, synchronize a library, share content, and then you also have a drop-down for more options that are more advanced without the need of having the complexity of the ribbon be available to the document library. You'll also notice on the top left, what's new is we implemented the app launcher as it exists in Office 365 into SharePoint Server 2016. That's to drive a consistent global navigation experience in hybrid scenarios across SharePoint Server 2016 on-premises, as well as Office 365. So beginning with the app launcher, we can select the app launcher, and as you can see, there's a number of options available to us. We have Yammer, OneDrive, Sites, Delve, and Video. The app launcher inside of SharePoint Server 2016 is extensible, and it also supports hybrid implementations as well. So a couple of capabilities that you see in the app launcher are actually native capabilities that exist in Office 365, such as Office 365 Video and Office Delve. Those two experiences live in the cloud. However, they're made available in a hybrid experience to your global navigation on-premises through the extensible app launcher. In this particular case, we're going to go ahead and start out with the Sites hybrid experience. So by selecting that Sites tile, as you can see, I'm automatically redirected to Office 365. And within the Sites experience, I have a hybrid component that becomes part of that as well. So now I'm in the Sites page of Office 365. On the left-hand side, you can see followed sites. In the middle column, you can see recent sites or recent activity, and then on the far right, you can see the recommended sites. The followed sites are actually an aggregate view of sites that I'm interested in across both on-premises as well as Office 365. So as you can see, I'm following Contoso Intranet, which is my intranet deployment on-premises. In addition, I'm also following SharePoint Online. So I have an aggregate view into site following, recent activity, as well as recommendations. Recent sites, again, are another aggregate view of sites that I've recently accessed. So the Sites hybrid experience provides a unified view into following recent sites in addition to recommendations that are based on the power of the Office graph. And that's in the furthest column to the right. I can also perform search via our new Cloud Hybrid Search option. Our new Cloud Hybrid Search option is designed to unify your content in the Office 365 index, making search results available via a single query, which means you can refine them as if they were a monolithic entity. It's no longer a federated search example through which you would submit a query to two places, and then you would have to rationalize the results independent of one another. In this particular case, since we unify your indexed metadata in Office 365, it provides a single view or a monolithic result set that you can refine as a single entity. So we'll go ahead and search for a term such as marketing in this particular environment. So on the hybrid sites experience, I can type the term marketing, and then I can retrieve results from both my intranet deployment, Contoso Intranet, as well as my SharePoint Online deployment. And as you can see by the URLs here, we have both present. The very first search result is Contoso Intranet at contoso.com. However, if we move down, you can also see I retrieved a content called Fabricam Pharmaceuticals. Fabricam Pharmaceuticals is in SharePoint Online, denoted by contoso.sharepoint.com. So as you can see, with a single query, I'm able to return results from both on-premises as well as Office 365. I can refine those results as if they were a single entity. So I can refine by result type, I can refine by author, and I can refine by modified date, and I can apply deep refiners much as you can with search today. However, that search result now is inclusive of all content across both my on-premises as well as my cloud deployments. The new Cloud Hybrid Search option also drives contextually relevant results powered by the Office Graph and Delve. So if you've implemented Cloud Hybrid Search, we can go back to the App Launcher and we can select the Delve icon. As you can see, I'm redirected to Office Delve. Now I can perform the same search using natural language search for the term marketing. And within Delve, I'm provided contextually relevant results that are inclusive of both content across on-premises as well as Office 365. So as you can see, the first result again is Contoso Intranet. That's indicative of content that's stored on-premises. You can also see content that's stored inside of Office 365 as well through Garth's OneDrive. So the marketing slogan suggestions from Q3 meeting. That's actually a content that's stored in OneDrive in Office 365. So I can deliver to my users a contextually relevant result set powered by the Office Graph and Delve that's enabled through Cloud Hybrid Search. In addition to having the web-based UX available to you, now you can also leverage the Delve application across a number of different mobile devices and that Delve application or the Delve app will be inclusive of content across on-prem and online. So hybrid not only opens the opportunity to bring modern innovation back to your users while maximizing ROI on your existing investments, it also enables your users to take advantage of applications that we've delivered explicitly for Office 365, yet leverage them against your on-premises content. And applications are the gateway to the cloud, but now they're also the gateway to your on-premises content. In addition to the Delve experience, we can also move and select OneDrive. In this particular case, OneDrive for Business was configured in a way that redirects the OneDrive for Business storage to Office 365. So when a user selects the OneDrive tile, they can automatically be directed to OneDrive in Office 365. And that provides your users the advantage of all of the innovation that exists in Office 365 for OneDrive for Business. In addition, as similar to Delve, they now can take advantage of the mobile apps as well. So they have two experiences now that they can take advantage of that's inclusive of their on-premises content. The Delve app for discovery of information, as well as the OneDrive app for data mobility and anywhere, anytime sync. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what else we're doing on the intuitive side with SharePoint Server 2016. On the intuitive side, we've made a number of new investments and enhancements to drive greater collaboration within your organization. So for example, we've introduced the concept such as site folders. So if you opt to selectively deploy OneDrive for Business, be it in Office 365 or on premises, you now have the option of site folders, which means you can actually pin sites that you're interested in to your OneDrive for Business view. So you always have view into sites that you're interested in or sites that perhaps you'd like to follow. We've also introduced large file support. So SharePoint Server 2016 now supports upload of 10 gigabyte files. So if you're working with multimedia or digital media, SharePoint Server 2016 can facilitate that type of content as well, to include engineering drawings. We've introduced simple controls, which I pointed out earlier, the simple command surface that resides above document libraries that provides an intuitive view into those actions that users most frequently take against content as it's stored in document libraries. Site creation speeds have been improved substantially by reducing a lot of the overhead associated with site creation in the past. We've also instrumented our simple sharing logic into SharePoint Server 2016, a derivative of Office 365, to which you can simply share content with users via share gestures that exist in document libraries, as well as through the navigation bar when you're at the site collection level. We have new mobile and touch experiences. So if you're on a mobile device, we have a new mobile touch web UX that enables you to browse SharePoint sites and content within those sites on a mobile device in a web-based view. When paired with Office Online Server, we have a new capability that we call Durable Links. And Durable Links are resilient links that can support the renaming and movement of files. So no longer do you have to send a new URL as a file becomes renamed or moved. The URL is persistent because we append each document's URL with a unique identifier. And then when a user requests the document, we don't look up the document by its URL, we look up the document by its unique identifier. And that enables the document to be resilient against those activities that users commonly take against them, such as renaming and moving. A great new set of developer experiences are also built into SharePoint Server 2016. We've introduced some capability from the Office 365 API set back to SharePoint Server 2016 to include our Modern Files API. And then, of course, we've enhanced search, both in scalability as well as from a hybrid perspective as well, by enabling cloud hybrid search, which enables the use of the Office Graph and Office Delve against content that you may have stored on premises. On the security side, as I talked about earlier, we were very conscious on security and compliance, and we've invested in delivering a perfect balance between compliance and collaboration. So enabling compliance to work across the organization without being intrusive to the users by making it more people-centric. We've introduced capabilities such as data loss prevention, classification IDs, policy templates, and new hybrid opportunities as well to help drive some of those scenarios. So let's go ahead and have a quick look at some of the data loss prevention scenarios. So in SharePoint Server 2016, one of the key investments that we made was delivering the aspect of a compliance center to SharePoint Server 2016. In earlier versions of SharePoint, the compliance tools were all isolated into their own individual silos. They were all separated with no affinity to one another. Now in SharePoint Server 2016, all of your compliance policies and your access to compliance-related tooling can be instrumented from one single unified point within your organization. So effectively, we have a new compliance policy center. Through the compliance policy center, you can do a number of different things. You can create in-place hold policies for retention-based purposes, through which you can define, using a set of keywords, how information should be stored. So you can actually create a search term and leverage that search term. Any content matching the search term within your environment will be discovered, and subsequently you can determine whether or not that content should be placed on hold to prevent further editing of that content in place. So we have a new in-place hold policy that enables you to do that. And those holds can be based on a number of parameters, based on the contents, based on the content that exists within a file, even based on a file modification or creation date, plus some subsequent number of days that may have passed beyond that modified or created date. So you have new in-place hold policies that can be driven through a single unified compliance center. We also have deletion policies. And deletion policies enable you to delete documents after a specified period of time. And you can actually assign those policies to site collections or site collection templates. So every new site collection that gets created in your environment can automatically take advantage of these policies. You don't have to push it out to each individual site collection. And you can create different rules for different site collections. Because not every site's content is going to need to adhere to the same policy, we've enabled the flexibility for you to selectively assign those policies. And policies themselves include a default rule that'll be automatically applied without any site administration selection required. So we've really made it programmatic and deterministic, through which you don't have to manage a lot of the aspects of applying policy to sites. You just have to manage the concept of creating the deletion policy and specifying the parameter through which deletion should occur. And you can create policies for different purposes. In my particular example, I have a policy explicit to my sites, or OneDrive for Business. And then I also have a policy that's centered on the content stored in SharePoint sites. And I can create different policies and specify deletion based on different periods of time for each of those. And I can have any number of policies to meet the needs of my organization. And then in addition, we've also delivered data loss prevention policies as well, enabling policy management inside of SharePoint Server 2016. So let's go ahead and take a quick look at the policy management aspect of SharePoint Server 2016. So I'm going to go ahead here in the Compliance Center, and I'm going to choose DLP Policy Management. And as you can see from DLP Policy Management, it enables me to create and manage DLP policies that can help me identify and protect sensitive information that may exist within my organization. And I can use those same policies and those same queries that are created as a result of data loss prevention via the eDiscovery Center as well, as traditional with earlier versions of SharePoint. So I'm going to create a new policy. In this particular case, I'm going to choose the Gram-Leach-Bliley Act. And I'm going to call my policy CONTOSA-GLBA for Gram-Leach-Bliley Act. So I'm going to go ahead and select that policy. As you can see, by selecting the policy template, it provides a description as well as what it protects. So in this particular case, the GLBA Act actually helps detect presence of information subject to GLBA, including information such as social security numbers or credit card numbers. So what it's actually going to find for me and help me protect in my environment is any content that may contain a credit card number, a U.S. bank account number, an individual taxpayer identification number, or even social security numbers. All of this works based on a concept that we call sensitive information types. And what a sensitive information type is designed to do is it performs a complex proximity scan as well as complex expression matching in order to discover information that meets the rules of a particular policy. Those sensitive information types can be used within a pre-built DLP policy. They can also be used within the Discovery Center to discover information as well for e-discovery purposes. The DLP policies that we ship out of the box are extensible. What that means is you can actually create your own DLP policies outside of what we've shipped with SharePoint Server 2016 using a simple XML schema. So we have a very extensible policy management experience in 2016 as well. So coming back to the policy we're creating, as you can see here, I have an option to set a parameter regarding the number of items that should be discovered before my rule is actually initiated. So I'm going to choose 9 for the number of results to show only the results if the content contains that many instances, 9 instances of particular sensitive information types. So for this particular example, if it contains 9 credit card numbers or 9 social security numbers, it'll actually trigger my new Contoso GLBA policy. I can also opt to send an incident report to a group of individuals or a distribution list in the event that new content is saved or edited that meets the criteria of the policy I've created. So in this particular case, if the number 9 is the number of instances that triggers my policy is related to GLBA, I can actually have an email sent to my compliance administrator anytime a policy violation occurs within my environment. I can then choose to notify my users whether they're violating policy by virtue of a policy tip. So in the event that they save or edit information that contains sensitive information based on the criteria of the policy I'm creating, I can actually notify them programmatically within SharePoint itself. I can also block access to the content. So in the event that sensitive information is stored in my environment, I can actually block access to that content, but I can allow the creating user to override and still share the content. And effectively, access would then be limited to the site administrator as well as the content's owner and the last modifier of the content. So for this particular policy, we're going to go ahead and select that because in some cases we may need to store sensitive information. We just want greater control over how that information is shared and discovered. So we'll save our policy, and now we have our Contoso GLBA policy. Now that we have the policy, we need to assign it to one or more site collections. So we'll come to the site collection assignment page, and I'll choose a site collection. So I can type in a URL. We'll choose the Contoso intranet in this case, which is contoso.com, the same intranet example we used in the hybrid scenario. I can search and then choose all of the sites that match the criteria of my query or just one of the sites. So I'm going to choose Contoso Intranet. That's the site collection I'd like to apply this policy to. I can create different policies for Contoso Research and other sites that may exist within my organization. So now that we have the site collection assigned, we need to assign the policy. So I choose Manage Assigned Policies, and now I can choose the policy. In my case, I only have one policy that we've created for demonstration purposes. So I'm going to choose the Contoso GLBA policy and save that. Now I can save site collection assignment. So now as you can see, Contoso Intranet has the policy definition of Contoso GBLA assigned to it. So let's take a look at what the user experience looks like once a policy has been created. Here we are at the research and development site within Contoso Intranet. And the document library is over to the right-hand side. Again, the simple controls or that simple command surface right above the document library. What you're going to notice is if you go back and compare it to the previous demonstration, something has changed with the two documents at the bottom of the document library, the clinical trials patient information document, as well as the patient data for Redoxycon document. Instead of having the Word or Excel icons present to the left of the document name, it now actually has a warning indicator to the left of the document name. And effectively what that means is my compliance policy has actually picked up on those two particular documents that contain information that violates the Contoso GLBA policy. In effect, what that does is it prevents user access to that content, with the exception of the owner, because I set the policy to enable the owner to override and still access the information. But if I were a user and I was to arrive at a document library and I tried to select a document that's under a policy restriction, what would happen is, one, I would select the document, and I would be apprised with a policy tip as to why I can't access it. So in this particular case, it shows that this item conflicts with the policy within your organization. That's the Contoso GLBA policy. And it also tells you that access to the item is blocked for everyone except for its owner, its last modifier, and the site owner itself. If I was the owner, the site owner, or the last modifier, I could actually open the item to fix the issues, or I could click resolve to override the policy, or even report the problem. So if I wanted to, I could actually click the open item button there, which opens a list view, and I could actually report to the compliance administrator, the one that I established inside of my Contoso GLBA policy, that there's content in the environment that violates policy assigned by my organization. So I can actually report it. I can resolve it if I'm an owner of the document, or I can open it up to fix the issues. And fixing the issues for me as the site owner may be removing the information that's in violation of the policy. And then we go to the extent of telling you what exists within that particular document that's in violation of the GLBA policy. So in this particular case, the item that I selected, the clinical trials patient information document, contains information such as U.S. Social Security numbers. That's the information that this particular document contains, which is why it's in violation of policy, the policy that I created a moment ago. So that's kind of where we focus from a compliance perspective. And there's a number of different things that you can do beyond just instrumentation of DLP policies within SharePoint Server 2016. Again, you can create new DLP policies, and you can leverage the policy management capabilities within SharePoint Server 2016. You can actually create DLP queries. Those DLP queries will take advantage of sensitive information types. Sensitive information types are effectively a query that you can use to discover sensitive information that may exist within your environment. And that's based on a set of criteria. Again, a sensitive information type is a way of you enabling a simple query that performs pattern matching and proximity scans to discover sensitive information. You can assign DLP policies to individual site collections, so no site collection has to have the same policy assigned to them. You can create document deletion policies for removal of information over a specified period of time, and you can also create in-place hold policies as well to hold information. And all of these policies can be combined to work together. So you can combine the aspects of in-place hold policies with sensitive information types or DLP queries to discover sensitive information in place or discover sensitive information and delete that information as well. So working backwards, we've also delivered a set of modern user experiences based on how we understand the way that users have worked inside of Office 365. So we've gained a lot of insight into what capabilities work well with users and which capabilities don't. And that's what led us to introduce concepts such as the simple command service, concepts such as simple sharing in addition to the improved mobile views, site folders, video support, inline previews for video and images, in addition to large file support. And then working even further up the stack, all the way back to when we talked about cloud-inspired infrastructure, it's taking the extent of experience that we have running SharePoint at scale in Office 365 and accruing that back to SharePoint Server 2016, in addition to enabling a seamless hybrid experience that enables you to take advantage of on premises as well as 365. Our virtual launch event, which is coming up on May 4th, we definitely encourage you and your customers to register for the virtual launch event. There's a link down below on the slide that's on the screen now that you can use to register for the event. It's going to be an exciting moment in SharePoint's history as we unveil the future for SharePoint. So I definitely encourage, again, you and your customers to register for the virtual launch event. And as we conclude the discussion on SharePoint Server 2016 to allow some time for Q&A, the way to think about what SharePoint Server 2016 represents is, one, it remains a comprehensive solution for connected information. It's built on the strengths of our innovation in SharePoint Server 2013 as well as SharePoint Online. So we've taken the best capabilities from each of those releases and combined them into a server that we've delivered back to you. Again, accruing innovation across cloud and on-premises to bring back to you that you can take advantage of on-premises, in the cloud, or somewhere in between by virtue of hybrid. We've really optimized it for the way that people work based on our understanding and the telemetry that we've been able to capture in Office 365. And then really it's about meeting the needs of the business. In today's ever-evolving world, it's social, it's mobile, and it's about getting things done. And it's about responding to market trends. And SharePoint Server 2016 provides a unique opportunity to respond to those trends at a very rapid cadence by deriving innovation from Office 365 and bringing it back to your users in SharePoint Server 2016 by virtue of hybrid. There's a lot more to learn about SharePoint Server 2016. If you're looking for a detailed overview of product experiences and capabilities that exist in the server, you can always visit sharepoint.microsoft.com. For IT professionals, you can see what's new for you via the link at the very bottom. And then we also have a new link called Explore SharePoint Server 2016, where you can just learn more about some of the fundamental experiences that we've built into the product. So with that said, we've been going for about 40, 45 minutes strong. I'd like to pause here and open it up for Q&A to see if there's any questions that we can help answer regarding today's webinar, SharePoint Server 2016.
Thank you, Bill. That was great. We had so many different questions, and I want to thank Ed Hale, my colleague from MTC in Reston, for answering a lot of them. There are a couple of outstanding questions I'm going to go over, and hopefully you can provide some insight. There is a question about whether this is going to be the last on-premises version of SharePoint. What's the answer?
Sally, that's actually a great question, and we had a lot of questions as to whether even SharePoint Server 2016 would be released, and there was a lot of speculation that SharePoint Server 2013 would be the last on-premises release, and March 14th was really the answer, culmination of SharePoint Server 2016. Now, we don't have any plans to make this the last on-premises server release. And that's, you know, the same thing that we said when we shipped SharePoint Server 2013. And I know there was a lot of concern as to whether or not there would be a 2016. I think March 14th showed our commitment to our on-premises product. And just like we said in 2013, we don't have any plans to make this the last server release.
There's another question about supportability. And the question is, will mainstream support for SharePoint 2016 be available for 5 years as it has been for other SharePoint releases?
Yeah, so nothing changes in respect to mainstream support for SharePoint Server 2016. So it's the same support lifecycle agreement that you'd be familiar with earlier versions of SharePoint. So the only changes that we've made with SharePoint Server 2016 in regards to related lifecycle management is that to the respect of InfoPath form services. So for InfoPath form services and the InfoPath 2013 client, we've actually extended support to align to that of SharePoint Server 2016. And that's because we're going to continue to support InfoPath 2013 for use with SharePoint Server 2016. So we've extended the support lifecycle of that particular client to align to that of our server release. And we have that on our release candidate blog. So if you go all the way back to November at officeblogs/SharePoint, we have an article on that. It's in our FAQ at the bottom of our release candidate announcement, to where we talk a little bit about the support lifecycle for InfoPath form services as well as the InfoPath 2013 client.
Perfect. There were a couple of questions about native app on other OSs like iOS and Android, and whether we can use apps like OneDrive to access files on-premises SharePoint 2016.
So for SharePoint Server 2016, the current set of mobile applications that you may have for OneDrive for Business, all of those are specific to Office 365. So the next gen sync client, for example, that we shipped in December, and it was available for a while in its preview period. That next-gen sync client is applicable only to OneDrive for Business inside of Office 365, as opposed to the older Groove client that our on-premises customers may be familiar with. So today, to the extent of its availability, it's available to Office 365. And you can take advantage of some of those native mobile apps for iOS, for Android, and other devices in those hybrid scenarios. And that's kind of the other aspect of value that hybrid can bring to an organization. Not only does it enable your open access to a lot of the innovation that we can't deliver on premises, such as the Office Graph, because of the complexity that comes with machine learning that you can't just put on a DVD, you not only gain the advantage of the experience itself, but you also gain the advantage of the applications that come along with it. In that particular case, it could be Delve. If you're leveraging a hybrid OneDrive experience, what comes with that is obviously the next gen sync client. So from a native client perspective, as you see them today, most of those are exclusive to Office 365, with the exception of when you implement hybrid environments, you can begin to take advantage of those applications.
Perfect. There was another question about durable links and whether, you know, this feature applies to all the documents within the farm, SharePoint farm, or this is something that an admin can go and specifically enable for a site.
So the way that the durable links experience works is it takes a dependency on Office Online Server. So the first aspect of implementation to get durable links is to implement Office Online Server in unison with SharePoint Server 2016. Those two products working together is what delivers the durable links capability. The durable links capability effectively becomes farm-wide, largely because when you establish the WAPI binding, that WAPI binding is a farm association. It doesn't have affinity to a site collection, it has an affinity to your farm. So a durable link is applicable to all of the site collections within your server farm environment.
And of course, we have a question about user profile. So the question is, has there any improvement to user profile service application in 2016 compared to 2013?
Yeah, so the user profile service application, we've actually made a number of improvements as related to resiliency and as related to scalability. But we've also made one fundamental change with the user profile service as well. Is one of the things that we did with SharePoint Server 2016 is we reduce the native dependency on a lot of applications that are outside of the scope of SharePoint, what we call partner team applications. And great examples of which is we no longer embed SQL Server Express as part of the SharePoint installation. In order to take advantage of SharePoint in a single server environment, we no longer have the concept of a standalone installation. Instead, what you would do is install SharePoint on a server. That server can run SQL Express or can run SQL Server editions. We've just not embedded the SQL Server Express edition into the product anymore. The same is applicable to the user profile service. So Forefront Identity Manager, probably the thing that people are most familiar with SharePoint Server 2016, we've actually removed that. We've removed that from SharePoint Server 2016. So it no longer comes with that native bidirectional sync option that's built directly into the product by virtue of FIM. Instead, what we've done is we've delivered the identity synchronization methodology through which customers of SharePoint 2007 and earlier are probably familiar with, which is the unidirectional synchronization based on HD sync. And if you'd like to implement bidirectional sync or more complex sync scenarios, we actually support integration with Microsoft Identity Manager. So the change is we've not only made a bunch of improvements to scale and resiliency as related to the user profile service, in addition to provisioning, which is very simple to provision now just by virtue of the UX in central administration, but we've also removed the complexities of an embedded identity management client and instead focused more of our efforts on interoperating with newer identity clients such as Microsoft Identity Manager. And with that said, you would deploy Microsoft Identity Manager on a separate server. And we also have a open source set of connectors available to you on GitHub. So you can actually go out and download pre-built connectors for SharePoint and Identity Manager, or you can actually fork and extend the ones that we deliver to meet more complex scenarios. So what we've done is not only just improved resiliency, but we've just offered a higher degree of flexibility in respect to how you can use Identity Manager and SharePoint together by open sourcing a lot of the connection experience between SharePoint and the client. So those are some of just, you know, surface level key investments that we've made in that space.
There was a question about licensing and whether the licensing for SharePoint 2016 is going to be the same as 2013. And something related, we have a couple of questions on SharePoint Foundation and whether we have a foundation release for 2016 or not, and if not, why?
So on the licensing question, that'll be the first one that I'll try to answer. And on the licensing side, the licensing model doesn't generally change with SharePoint Server 2016, we effectively still have our SKU that has editions associated with it. There's both a standard and an enterprise edition that are available with 2016. So the overall SKU and edition aspects of licensing don't fundamentally change as compared to earlier versions of SharePoint. Now on Foundation, SharePoint Server 2016 is representative of the first release where we haven't SIM shipped or simultaneously shipped a Foundation client. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're not ever going to ship a Foundation client, but we're not SIM shipping a Foundation client with this particular release. And some of that is by virtue of how we build the product as well. For most of our customers, SharePoint Server or SharePoint Foundation 2013 continues to be a great product to enable capabilities that Foundation delivers, the basic document library experiences, the basic collaborative experiences. So Foundation 2013 still remains a great opportunity for those who need a Foundation offering today. And then obviously in Office 365, we have a SharePoint Online offering that can help drive a lot of those scenarios as well. But the current server suite is one where we haven't SIM shipped products. So in the past, our customers are probably more familiar with when we used to simultaneously ship a Foundation, a SharePoint server, a Exchange server, a Skype for Business or a Link server, in addition to an Office client. And then effectively it was one milestone that represented the entirety of kind of the Office ecosystem. And we no longer do that, or we no longer did that when we approached this release. Instead, Exchange server was made available prior to SharePoint server. SharePoint server is being made RTMs prior to the Office Online server. So really we've moved beyond the aspects of parallel shipping all of our products. Instead, we're focusing our energies on ensuring that we meet the criteria bar that we've set out when we started to design the product. And once we meet that criteria bar is when we ship. So, you know, the dates become less arbitrary and they're tied to a tangible quality milestone before we actually release the product and make it generally available. So it's kind of a change in the way that we've shipped the products as opposed to the way that we've shipped them in the past.
Perfect. There were a couple of questions on extensibility and customization, which I think the best place to refer to is the devoffice.com and pattern practices. Do you have any other suggestion or references for folks who are interested?
Yeah, I would definitely review the materials that are available on dev.office.com and familiarize yourself with SharePoint development, much as you would have for SharePoint Server 2013. So that's really understanding the add-in model, understanding the concept of provider-hosted apps, understanding client-side object model, understanding representational state transfer service, and obviously, you know, more and more we're taking dependencies on some of the modern JavaScript frameworks, whether that be Ember or React or Angular, Node, you know, and many of the others. So it's really familiarizing yourself not only with the modern development tool chain, but also with the traditional way that you would develop with SharePoint. And as I mentioned in part of the conversation is not only did we accrue a lot of the cloud experience back to SharePoint Server 2016 on say the IT level, but we also introduced say like the Files API. And that was derived directly from Office 365. That's one of those new modern APIs that you can take advantage of now on premises. So the other thing as well is the server OMs remains available. So SharePoint Server 2016 still supports full trust code. That doesn't go anywhere. Depending on what your use case scenarios are and the direction you want to move, if ultimately you see yourself in the cloud as part of your future, then I would definitely begin developing in a manner that's friendly to Office 365 to ease some of the constraints of getting there, because customization is often one of those core constraints that don't enable a lot of customers to immediately take advantage of Office 365. So it's really developing in a more portable way. And if you're looking for that portability, then definitely develop according to the principles and guidance, both on Office 365 PNP, in addition to those that you can find resources for on dev.office.com. For other customers that are gonna opt to remain on premises for the foreseeable future, you can continue to take advantage of full trust code as well. And the scope of the server OM has actually been broadened because of the new capabilities that exist in the server.
Perfect. We have a couple more questions. We have a couple minutes. Hopefully we can go over to those items. One of them was regarding the Office Online server and, you know, when the bits will be available for folks to install and integrate with their on-premises SharePoint 2016.
Great. So that's actually a great question, and I don't have a definitive answer as to a timeline or a specific date as related to availability of Office Online server. It's a product that is built outside of our own engineering organization or our own teams, so I can't definitively speak to their release timeline in respect to when it'll become available. There is a preview version of it that's available now. As soon as they're ready to launch, I'm sure that they'll have a blog post available on Office Blogs, as well as a marketing moment to celebrate the release of Office Online Server. But because it's a product that's not necessarily built within the scope of our team, I can't definitively speak to their timelines.
There was another question about using the trial version of SharePoint 2016. And the question is, mm-hmm. if they install their farm using the trial, when they have access to the key, can they upgrade to their volume licensing key, or they have to reinstall the farm?
And that's actually a great question. So for SharePoint Server 2016, we delivered a number of different releases. Obviously, back in August, we did an IT preview. We ultimately followed that up with a beta 2, and then subsequently with a release candidate. And the release candidate was actually delivered as a patch for beta 2, so you could install it directly on top and bring yourself from one version to another. Now, coming back to your question, you've downloaded, for example, the SharePoint Server 2016 RTM trial that we released on March 14th. In that particular case, if you've downloaded the trial experience that we shipped on March 14th, the RTM trial, and have activated it with the 180-day trial key, you can actually provide a perpetual key, and just like you could with SharePoint Server 2013. So the easy answer to the question is yes. If you're running the RTM trial today using the 180-day key that we provide on the Download Center, all you would have to do is, once you have your VLSC key or your perpetual key, is just convert the license. And you can do that by virtue of Windows PowerShell. You can also do it by virtue of the central administration user experience.
And you just released the images on Azure as well, right? So they're available for people to use the 2016 trial, right?
Indeed. So if you browse the Azure marketplace and you filter by SharePoint, you can discover both a refreshed SharePoint Server 2013 image in addition to a new SharePoint Server 2016 image. So if you'd like to get up and running quickly with SharePoint Server 2016 and evaluate some of its capabilities, and there's a SharePoint Server 2016 image available. It's been optimized for MinRoll, so effectively you can just spin up the VM. SharePoint's automatically available. The license key is already specified, so you would just run the product's configuration wizard, and from there you would specify which role you would like that server to provide. If you're evaluating or it's a proof of concept, and you don't necessarily need the scale and resiliency and to be able to replicate what could potentially become a production deployment, you can leverage the single server role directly there within Azure very quickly and get up and running. Or optionally, you can leverage the custom role if you want all of the capabilities of SharePoint in a single box machine. And then because it's just an image in the Azure gallery, you can extend it as well. So you can provision one as a front end, spin up another one, and you can use that as an app server, spin up another one to create a search farm. So there's a lot of flexibility to that, and that became available just yesterday.
So last question. There were a couple of questions regarding training for end users and the references and content that will be available. Is this something that you have anything that you can share today or during the May 4th event? And where folks should go and, you know, look for training content for the end user. Also on the IT Pro regarding upgrades and some advanced topics, what would be the best way for them to get the information?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. So for a lot of the aspects of training for users, so driving that adoption, familiarizing users with the platform, you can find that content at success.office.com. And we actually have a user adoption kit that is universally applicable to both SharePoint Online as well as SharePoint Server 2016, because they share so much consistency. The user experience itself today, there's so much parity between the two that you can just repurpose a lot of the content that was explicitly designed for SharePoint Online and you use that for your users in SharePoint Server 2016. For user adoption and user training, success.office.com is always the best resource or starting point to get started, whether you're in Office 365 or on-premises. And then for IT, on July, I believe the 5th, and I would have to confirm, but if you go out to Microsoft Learning, you can actually search Microsoft Learning, and a new course is going to become available for planning and administering SharePoint Server 2016. It's effectively a 5-day course that leads to certifications that trains you in depth from planning a SharePoint deployment all the way down to the concepts such as backup and recovery, information architecture, logical architecture, as well as helping you plan a physical architecture in addition to some of those hybrid scenarios. So if you're looking for training, whether it's classroom-based, on your own pace, or in person, you can check Microsoft Virtual Academy. There's already some content that is starting to appear there related to SharePoint and hybrid. There's content that's going to be ready this summer in respect to that in-person 5-day deep dive courseware that you can take advantage of that would lead you to certification for both the server and hybrid. And then ultimately, the last resource for learning more is TechNet and MSDN, both for IT professionals and developers, respectively.
Perfect. So we're at the end of our presentation. I want to thank you, Bill. I want to thank Ed, Dean, doing the director role for, covering this session. And I want to thank all the attendees for being here and all the great questions. And hopefully, we're going to see you all on May 4th as part of the virtual launch event. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thanks, everyone.